As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now you have a reason to crack a cold one before the game. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We have ourselves some hockey weather outside, so if you're driving around the GTA area, drive carefully. Of course, Hockey Nation, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, a Saturday afternoon radio staple, we like to think, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Fan Radio Network. 11 games around the National Hockey League. We'll be checking in on pretty well all of them and counting down to the Toronto Maple Leafs hosting the Winnipeg Jets tonight. And Ozzie, good news for the Maple Leafs. Joffre Lupul on the ice this morning. He is expected to play tonight. And a sighting of the captain, Dion Phaneuf, on the ice for the first time. I don't know if he'll be as ready as early as Thursday. He did refer to a setback the last 7 or 10 days because we had been wondering where Dion was. He had just flat out disappeared.
Well, and I was watching some of those skating drills that he was doing, and you got to wonder, he disappeared. Well, what's he been doing the last number of weeks? Because he looked like he was
tired. I mean, he looked like me. Yeah. He looked like me playing tennis against you last week.
I was going to say that. That was the first thing that I thought of. And then you mentioned Joffre Lupul. An interesting comments that Joffre Lupul made in regards to the game. Like, you still want to win. We're not playing. It's not like we're playing to chase a playoff spot. So, again, it continues to be a very interesting room, an interesting place where guys are making very unusual comments. And I guess when you lose as often as they have, then things are just bound to come out that otherwise you would never expect what some guys have said.
A 2-1 loss last night to the Carolina Hurricanes. And after the games, we talked to Tripp Tracy from the Carolina broadcast crew. And he mentioned that last game against Toronto, the team, the Carolina team, was jacked that Eric Staal took that slap shot at Dion Phaneuf in retaliation because of Phaneuf's hit on his brother earlier in the game. And just about that was the kind of stuff Carolina, team that's struggling like the Leafs, had. Nobody from the Leafs stepped up in that particular game. And that just seemed to be a microcosm of this malaise that, boy, the big line, I don't know who you blame more than the others. They have not performed well statistically on the ice, to say the least. And they also appear, again, the word appear, not to be too worked up about it.
Yeah, you know what? They're accepting of their destiny and their fate. I mean, they're all looking around each other. And not to say that last night's effort, because I think the effort was there for the most part, as far as the Maple Leafs go. But that's what it's come down to, is like, we're close, we're doing things well, and you know, you and I are tired of hearing the same thing. I'm sure they're tired of answering the same questions. But at the end of the day, for this particular group, and I played on some not so very good teams. You know, certainly my first couple of years where I never even made the playoffs with the Red Wings. I mean, it was definitely rebuilding there. But I don't think it was ever nearly quite as bad as it is right now with this particular group that is just, they don't know what to do. And effort, you know, at times is there, but, you know, collectively as the entire organization is just, I don't think we've ever seen anything like it.
Well, you're commending that, okay, they've had a number of games that they've just lost by one goal on the road. But then the cold, dark fact is they have lost 14 consecutive road games, a club record, staggering amount, staggering amount. So in trying to say they played it close, and you also have, I mean, the crowd at Air Canada Center for the Florida game. It seems like once this whole thing came up and people, more and more people keep talking to me about tanking. And it seems like it's given credibility to this ownership or management group, more the management group, that, okay, they're going to go about doing it right. And I feel like saying, wait a sec, I hope they do. I'm not saying they can't or won't.
Well,
but why did they not evaluate certain things along the way rather than stating the obvious now that we've all seen? Meanwhile, you've locked up so many of those guys to long-term contracts that are going to make it very problematic in the rebuild.
Probably the same reason you and I thought that these guys were going to make the playoffs at the start of the year.
That's okay for us to say. We're not there.
I know, part of what ends up happening, and I think has occurred, and I'm not making excuses for them,
because we were talking about on the ice, and I said that. I stood by it. I thought they had the skill to make the playoffs.
Yeah, so we're talking on the ice, and we look to this season and how they made some minor adjustments and tweaks. And I think as managers or coaches, it's like taking on the player, of which Buffalo has in Evander Kane, is that you always think that you could change the person or change something ends up getting tweaked because you brought in Shanahan, you changed the assistant coaches. There were things that they made an effort to do, and unfortunately, it's all not worked out at all. And therefore, now you're readdressing everything pretty well. I mean, you're not going to gas everybody on this particular group, but the players right now can't wait to get through this season. It still remains to be seen in a week's time who's going to be left here, and then the rebuild does begin, or retool, however way you want to put it.
And, you know, I watching Paul Maurice today, and I was talking to Dennis Bayek, one of their play-by-play guys, or their play-by-play guy, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, and talking about the skates and just about that. Paul Maurice, it's mandatory about skates rather than optional. I want to pick up that in a second because the Toronto Maple Leafs has been the opposite. But Eddie Olchuk, a regular Saturday contributor, a busy guy tonight. He is in Santa Clara, California, Levi Stadium for the outdoor game between the LA Kings, San Jose Sharks. How you doing, Eddie O?
Hey, Gord. Hey, Oz. How are you guys doing today?
We are good. We know you don't have as much time as normal, but you've been through the cold ones and the warm ones.
Yeah.
Maybe leading up, talk about this one, about its uniqueness and flavor.
Well, yeah, I got the short straw on the assignment last year in out at Dodger Stadium in Chavez Ravine between the Ducks and Kings. I wasn't able to win that one, but got lucky enough to put on this assignment tonight. And this stadium here is as nice as a stadium you're going to see. I mean, Levi Stadium here, the home of the 49ers, is great. And I mean, the weather is going to be perfect. I think it's going to be somewhere in the high 40s here at puck drop. And, you know, yesterday the ice wasn't all that great, but I think that they've had their time to be able to work with it. And it's, you know, it's not an easy assignment for Dan Craig and his crew. But I think both teams are certainly looking forward to playing in front of 70,000 people. And let's not forget, I mean, this is a huge game. For a lot of different reasons, and San Jose comes off a big win the other night in Dallas, and LA is, you could argue they're as hot as any team in the league right now, so it should be a heck of a game, and you take the environment into it. Hopefully this is one of those that people will be remembering for a long time.
Hey, Eddie, you're a pretty well-dressed guy. Remember the suits you used to wear and all that kind of stuff and how particular you were. Who gave the advice to the LA Kings to wear white pants? Like, when have we ever seen white pants in hockey?
Charlie Finley?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I appreciate the nice compliment, I think, from my former roommate. As long as they don't have guys that hang their hair up with their pants, I'm okay with what other color pants that they want to wear.
Did Ozzie lay?
The one thing I will say is that, and I think this is something that, I mean, we've talked a lot about as broadcasters to the National Hockey League and hockey operations, is that the size of the numbers on these jerseys, both on the back and on the sleeve, to me, I hope are coming for down the road, because you could see these numbers from a mile away. And I think not only for our great fan bases and all the different venues that we have in the National Hockey League, but also when you get to a situation like this where, you know, you're a long ways away and, you know, it's hard to know who's on the ice sometimes. You can't see the nameplates, but that's one thing to take notice tonight if people are watching the game, with the size of the numbers, especially on the sleeves of these two teams.
Well, look forward to that. He's one. Now, you guys as roommates, so you're the GQ guy. Did you lay Ozzie's clothes out for him on the road like Madeline did at home?
Well, I was told by Madeline once, is just to make sure that the giraffes go with the giraffes and the elephants go with the elephants. So I think Ozzie was one of the first NHLers to wear garanimals. And I don't know, they didn't have any leather in the leather type. But
hey, you were talking about the teams tonight. San Jose Sharks, I know they're still hanging on to a wild card spot, but, you know, it's kind of like the Boston Bruins in the East, the San Jose Sharks in the West. You always believe they're going to be there and contenders, but then you start to wonder, I mean, is this a little bit unusual adversity for the Sharks, or is it part of an 82-game season?
I think it is part of the up and down and roller coaster that most teams have, Gordon, in the National Hockey League. I mean, I think that Todd McClellan is one of the best coaches that the National Hockey League has. He's got a tremendous staff with him. This team is prepared as well as any team that'll be there. And for them, I think they have the skill level. I'm not sure on the goaltending, but I think they have the skill level. They can play a lot of different ways. But to me, I think it just comes down, and I think this has probably been, you know, who they are over the course of the last handful of years, Gord, is are they mentally tough enough? I mean, can they endure some adversity? Can they endure pressure and be able to wake up on the right side of the pillow? And that, to me, starts with the leadership amongst the players. I think that that's what you have to look at. As I said, they're prepared. They have, you know, they have a lot of the intangibles that you need. Now, you can argue with some of the moves that have been made, and they've gone, you know, relatively young, so to speak. I think Dougie Wilson did a great job there a couple of years ago when he started, you know, moving guys out because they were, you know, slow afoot. You know, guys like Chloe and Murray just come to mind. He got those guys out of there. You bring in a guy like Rafi Torres, who they certainly missed due to injury right now, but yeah, I think it's a wait and see with the San Jose Sharks. There's no doubt about it. And I think they're definitely good enough to make it. I think Todd McClellan came out publicly the other day and said, hey, you know, we're going to make the playoffs. And he certainly put the pressure and then the onus at the skates of his players. And hopefully, I think, knowing Todd, I think that there certainly was a message there, not only being sent to the fan base, but to the organization and the players, is that, you know what, forget it. We are going to make it. And I'll say this, one last thing about San Jose, is that you look at their schedule, the last 13 games of the regular season, they play 10 games on the road, Gordon Oz, out of the last 13 games. They play 10 of 13 on the road. I'm not sure who signed off on that, but I wouldn't be particularly happy if I'm the coach or the players on that schedule.
Eddie, I know that you, at one point, played in Los Angeles as part of your career, but you know, they're the hottest team right now in the National Hockey League, and we've had Mike Fiuta on here talking about that Daryl Sutter gives his group because of their maturity. They're a self-driven type of group, and so finally it appears that their game is back on. What's been the turnaround for them in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think you got to look at goal in goal, Oz, and Jonathan Quick was outstanding in their last win against Colorado. I think he had 42 or 43 saves, and you know, he only gave up one. The last three games, he's given up 1, 2, and 1 respectively. So when you're getting goaltending like that, you're going to be in. You know, they're healthy now. I mean, Tyler Toffoli's come back and has just been a stud. I mean, he's just been pure gold every time he's been on the ice. And you know, the leadership of Jeff Carter, Drew Doughty's playing half the game all the time. You know, I still wonder if they're quick enough on the back end. This is a team that's played a lot of hockey over the course of the last couple of years. It's well documented. So I think, guys, timely goal scoring, they got healthier, and, you know, the goaltending of Jonathan Quick has allowed them to be, you know, in a lot of these games as of late. And, you know, look, they lost to Florida on that road trip, and then they went into Tampa Bay. And since that game in Tampa Bay, you know, and I mean, everybody looks at Tampa Bay and, you know, thinks they're one of the top five teams in the National Hockey League. Well, they went right in there and took care of business. And since that point on that road trip, they have not looked back. And you know, they got an opportunity here to run it to 7 tonight in Santa Clara against the Sharks.
Before we let you go, the Winnipeg Jets in town, of course, very undisciplined their last game against the Washington Capitals. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of penalties, number one in the league, but not those kind of penalties. What do you expect as far as the challenge for the Leafs tonight?
Well, I don't want to say they're struggling with the offensive part of the game, but you know, losing a guy like Matthew Perreault is certainly going to hurt. I mean, they brought Drew Stafford in there. I mean, we talked about Stafford last week, but he got hurt. It'd be interesting to see where Dustin Byfuglien is. I mean, they got a surplus of defensemen there, but they're a big team. They're a heavy team. They're hard to play against, and I think they can play any way that you want. But I think for them, they'll probably be a little bit more disciplined tonight, be a little bit more in control. And, you know, they're looking in the rearview mirror as well. You know, this little dive that they've gone on here the last, you know, 4 or 5 games, whatever it is, you can't be doing this at this time of year. But I think Winnipeg is, you know, Winnipeg will be in that mode of looking and bouncing back here tonight.
Eddie, did you end up getting any residuals from the new naming of the stadium there, Levi Stadium, because of the pants that you often wear while you're broadcasting? And a lot of people didn't realize that, but
I'd rather have the Levi's on than the Jimmy Connor shirts you used to wear back in the early 90s. So, hey, Gord, always great being with you, bud. Take care, huh?
No problem. We'll put some money in your Levi's back pocket for that. Thanks, Eddie O, okay?
All right, boys. Talk to you soon. See ya.
All right. Take care.
Eddie Olczyk. He's at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. The outdoor game between the Los Angeles Kings and San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, you know what? I know it's all about advertising and all of the stadiums, but I'm so confused on these places, you know, because I'm just used to Candlestick Park or, you know, it still is Dodger Stadium, is it not? Where the stadium?
I think it is.
Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium. There's not too many. That's one thing I got to say. I've got no connection to Air Canada, but just Air Canada Center has whatever resonated well as far as here, but other places.
Well, because it started as the Air Canada Center.
I guess
Center.
So. That may be a
it
simple.
Wasn't like, you know.
No, but you know, some that you got, like, you know, you got the Filipov Trust Company East Side or something like that, arena, whatever.
I've never heard
like
of that. Well, where's that located?
I don't know. I just thought of Harold Filipov, the old player. That just came to my mind. Yeah, okay. But, you know, like, the, you know, the citrus fruit, whatever. I don't know. So I was talking earlier.
Same like bowl games, right? I don't even know the bowl games anymore.
Well, yeah, the Rose Bowl is the only one, I think, without a title sponsor. I mean, Rose, Cotton, whatever, Orange, you name
it. Okay, what were you thinking about?
Paul Maurice. So he doesn't have optional practices. He will at times tell guys not to skate. You know, just whatever, but there it isn't.
But I mean, back-to-back nights, I mean, he's not having the guys go out there on morning skates on back-to-back affairs on the day of a game.
No, but they're not optional, though. He would tell who to go out and not to go out. They're not optional. So, I mean, he may tell two-thirds of the team not to go out. I didn't expect the Leafs. It was optional today. I mean, because they had back-to-backs, but it was funny. We get in this, it's interesting about, you know, Brendan Shanahan was received with great fanfare here. I don't knock that. And people ask, what did you expect from Brendan Shanahan?
Yeah.
I expected him to live here. Okay? I did. And some people think you're making too big a friend of mine in the media, who I think Brendan must talk to, said, it's not a big deal, him. And I just said, well, I think it is. And optically and many other ways. And I'm not going to, you know, beat him up about it, but I just do. But I'm thinking now with the Leafs then, I mean, they have so many options. They could live somewhere else. Mm-hmm. The players could just fly in from Buffalo or something like that. Just, you know, go there. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
No.
Bizarre. They practice less of any team this year.
It really is. I mean, they've gone from one extreme to the other.
It's a drop-in center.
If you remember back even in early or late November, early December, when Randy started then making the optionals. And what did I tell you? I said, I don't like it.
Absolutely.
Back-to-back, of course, but you start making days of games optionals. I think what ends up occurring is you no longer become a team, and it's part of preparation on the day of a game, albeit not on back-to-back affairs. But if you're sitting beside the guy, and I don't care if you go out there for 10 minutes, and I bet you Phil would only go out there for 2 minutes if he had the option to only stay out there for 2 minutes. But you know what I mean? That's the way you prepare, because game preparation starts the moment you wake up. What you do in the rink, what you do sitting beside the guy next to you and all that kind of stuff carries over into when the puck does drop.
Well, and it becomes and particularly when they were having success. So then you deem where you are in the pecking order, but deciding you're not going to take an optional. So a Nazem Kadri, for example, but just says, okay, it's like on the charter plane. I'm not sure how they do it now, but used to be if you were a kid, you started in the front and part of your seasoning was you got to move to the back of the plane, mm-hmm. right? With the veterans. You know, the card game and all that stuff. That was something, a passage, except Alan Bester. He always stayed at the front. He couldn't.
Oh, he wasn't allowed.
He wasn't allowed the back. No. It's just,
didn't he sit beside you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah. They call it Big Ears, Big Ernie Douglas. So they had but the other one is funny. The old skates, morning skates started because the equipment, you never knew about your skates being sharpened. It was so hit and miss. Now, the Leafs had a great guy named Tommy Naylor, who was apparently as good as there ever was. But George Armstrong said that back in the 60s or whatever, the rule was your skates had to hit the ice. So the whole team had to come in. And George would, at the end, he wouldn't take his suit off, and he would put his skates on, wouldn't tie them up, would go out one door and hang onto the boards and go across and come in the other door on the bench. And that was his day of game skate. But all the team had to do it, right?
Yeah,
it wasn't an optional thing that you decide where you stand on the pecking order.
You know, and I remember when I first broke into the National Hockey League, and we would wear sweats, and I'd be looking around being a young rookie, and there was no structure. Like, there were no drills. You just went out there, took a few shots on the goalie. It was just a skate. You know, you go out there for 5 minutes or whatever. And then the Mike Keenan generation, where they were practicing. Like, it was a ridiculous practice. And what about John Brophy when he was mad at us? We'd have a 45-minute practice. And we, like, for example, we played the night before Joe Louis.
Yeah.
Would lose to the Rangers, possibly.
Well, Red Wings,
or
actually.
Red Wings,
yeah.
Yes, Joe Louis.
Probably your problem.
but the next day, it's like there was no optional back-to-back. Yeah. We were on the ice at 10:30, and we would be doing drills right to 11:15. And the Red Wings, the next morning, coming for their optional skate, would be at the end looking at us, shaking their heads, because he would even have us lined up on the goal line down in bags.
I know.
And
left
and
the game on the
that's
on
when
the
we started that circus song, you know.
I'm not aware of
back
yeah,
in town.
I understand.
Well,
I understand.
Well, anyways, it was an inside thing with the players. But
now, Dion Phaneuf on the ice. One thing about this morning, he did talk afterwards. And I think because last year was against Winnipeg, was the final home game of the season. They still had some road games to go, and they were mathematically eliminated game.
I think they had five games to go if they won all five games. But they laid an egg
against Winnipeg. And that's when Dion was taken to task about saying we gave a good effort. And that's what everyone said.
Really?
Whoa. No, I know. And I think it's interesting, after Snubgate, whatever you want to call it, and other things this year. I mean, Dion Phaneuf, I respect that he wants to be a captain and a leader. I think this is an interesting time for him to come into or re-enter a dressing room that really needs some of that. And it's a challenge for him. And whether I have no idea when he'll be back, if he'll be back as early as Thursday or later. But
I think he'll be back like March the 2nd. How about that?
You think he'll be back? How about
that's a guess?
So what, you think Dion's waiting to see where he goes?
No, I didn't say that. Did I say that?
No, I said it. Yeah, you know, whatever. We can play the tape back.
I just think it's interestingly
are we in court here?
Convenient that that's happening. You said he had a setback.
He said he had a setback.
Oh, he said he had a
setback.
7 to 10 days
ago. Okay. I was saying he spoke to the media after practice.
Okay.
You writing this down or what?
I am.
Okay.
I'm going to quote you on that when we talk next week.
Do you agree with it or not? I just about it in Phaneuf's case. If he wants to be the captain, because I don't believe both Phaneuf and Kessel will be gone. I think one of them will be here next year. I think both,
I'm with you there.
Both of them will certainly be here beyond the trade deadline. I don't see either of them going the trade deadline.
Really?
Yes.
You don't
really see
one of them going trade deadline?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's a more complicated deal. I know they're working on it.
I think it's pretty easy.
Okay, what is it?
I don't think it's complicated at all.
Tell me the deal.
You find a suitor that wants to take on his contract. You're going to take some money back. I think
would you take Mike Richards for Dion Phaneuf?
No, there'd have to be others involved.
Okay, but that would be the deal.
But I would take Mike Richards in this situation.
Yep. Okay, but I just
purely out of a guy that's won, a guy that has, by the way, is getting married, I think has settled down. I think he brings some character, and I think you just change a little bit of the voice. I've been there. I've done it, and instantaneously, he's been a captain before.
He's in the American Hockey League now.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Okay, so.
Well, so, I'm just, you got to balance them. You got to balance them. You got to get the guy that you think you're getting for it.
Oh, who are you going to get? Let's maybe trade Dion Phaneuf to San Jose, and we'll take Joe Thornton because contracts.
That's why I don't think this deal. I think the deal can be done in the offseason.
Do you think that's going to happen like that?
Get Joe Thornton? No.
But
to get a significant asset back, it can't happen on the playoff drive because those teams want all assets in hand to win a Stanley Cup. So that's why I believe more happens.
I think there's a number of teams that are interested in Dion.
Oh, absolutely. And then Phil Kessel. Absolutely.
And again, how do you measure value when you are getting rid of, 6 years at $7 million, right?
Yeah, 6 more years at $7 million. But you're right. So, it's a challenge. And I'm not knocking your about, I respect what you have to say about Mike Richards. That's what they have to try and figure out. That's for sure. We'll take a break, come back. Leah Hextall will join us, a friend from Rogers as well, Sportsnet. And later on, Kelly Rudy, the top of the hour. You're listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Welcome back, Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network, taking a look at 11 games going on around the National Hockey League, two earlier today, and of course, counting down to the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, did you want to comment on those two earlier games, or was that in the update? You know, Flyers winning.
Yeah.
3-2 in a shootout.
Yeah.
Over Nashville.
Very good, yeah.
And they pull within 4 points of the Boston Bruins. So Boston's been really struggling. And then the other game, which was a very good game, the Washington Capitals, same thing, won in a shootout against the New York Islanders.
Well, of course, last year when you were not with me here, but quite often we looked at the Boston end, the Boston Bruins, and Leah Hextall would join us, talk about the Boston Bruins. Now she's a big shot, a host here on Rogers, so I get to work with her on Hockey Central and other games around. And Saturday night we've caught her on one of her rare quiet times to chat hockey and some of those teams. How you doing, Leah?
I'm good, Gord, but you have it mixed up. I get to work with you, the big shot, not the other way around.
Oh, well, can you expand on that? What is that really like? And I want to know. You work with a lot of different people, but
Yeah. You know what, Gord? Honestly, Ozzie Gord is one of my favorites. I'm gonna say that flat out. He's one of my favorites. He's easy to deal with. You know, you know some of the characters we have over there. You know, the Kyprioses of the world, the Claims of the world. So getting to deal with Stellick is like a night off instead of those fools. So, yeah, it's good times, folks.
I'm glad to provide you a little bit of sanity as well. Yeah, yes. That's it. So, well, we're going to have a busy March, busy trade deadline, lots coming up.
Yes.
But as Ozzie was mentioning, Boston Bruins were a team you're especially close to and following them the last couple of years. And here are the Flyers, another team with the lineage and that, winning this afternoon and hot on their tails. But I want to go back to the Boston team that you've seen for a few years and why it's a little bit off this year, at least as far as the points go.
When you talk to people in Boston, it's just been a weird year for them. You know, obviously coming into the season with the loss of Jerome Iginla and not being able to bring someone in to replace those 30 goals on the wing because of the cap situation in Boston, that was going to be a difficulty from the very beginning. But I think one of the big things is they've had some injury issues, but really it's just they have so many players who are just having off years. I mean, they're not scoring. They don't seem to be getting it done defensively. Tuukka Rask has been good for them, you know, especially in the month of January where he was so hot. But, you know, it's just a lot of individual pieces having tough years. Their fourth line isn't doing what it was supposed to. And it's just the tone was kind of set from the start of the season. You know, the loss of Iginla, the trade of Boychuk, you know, also the move of Sean Thornton to Florida. Those were two huge character guys in the room. And the faces in the room changed. And their youth isn't doing what they thought it was going to do. And, you know, here you go. You have a Bruins team that's fighting, as you mentioned, with Florida for that final wild card spot in the East. And, you know, one of the biggest things, though, guys, is they just don't have the same identity, I don't think. I mean, we all know this. You hear the Big Bad Bruins, but it wasn't so much the Big Bad Bruins as it was they were just a really hard team to play against. Jonathan Toews has gone on record and said that no matter what game you play against them, you always knew you played Boston because you felt it when you were done it, no matter what. And it's just no one's scared to go in there anymore. It's a very different place in Boston right now.
Leah, if we go back just a little bit, and I remember Charlie Jacobs went in, one of the owners of the Bruins, and I think really called out the team, and they responded after that. And then I just want to take us back to this week and their road trip and how interesting it was to hear that the coaches and I think management had to huddle to decide on who was going to start in net, whether they were actually going to go and start Malcolm Subban in one of these games. And so again, it speaks to the peculiar stuff that I think has gone on with the Bruins, you know, for at least this season.
Yeah, I mean, right there, and you know, you got to kind of feel bad. I mean, Malcolm Subban goes in last night. He had a bit of tough sledding in his very first game, but, you know, the adjustment there is just so hard, especially for goaltenders, the difference in the pace of the game. But you're absolutely right, Ozzie. I mean, this is a Bruins team that you look at the success they've had over the past, you know, really, I mean, they're trying to make the playoffs, I believe, for, you know, something like the eighth straight year. But they've had so much success as of late, and there's always been such confidence, you know, sometimes to the point where it would bug other people because they were just such a confidence franchise. But it's not that way right now. And my biggest thing is I'm interested to see what happens at the trade deadline. I mean, their fan base, from what I'm hearing, you know, in Boston from talking to people, they're not happy right now, and they're calling for head. And I think that's a little premature because, I mean, I think what happens in Boston is they're pretty spoiled because they've been so successful, and their fans don't really understand what it's like to, say, be a Leafs fan, for instance. So, I mean, but I'm interested to see what they're going to do at the deadline. I don't think that they're going to have to make a decision. Are we a team that's, you know, are we going to just try to get into the playoffs, you know, and they're not going to bring in a piece right now that's going to make a huge difference. So, you know, do they start getting rid of maybe some of these core players? Not the big core players like the Krejcis and the Bergerons and the Charas, but, you know, maybe some guys like, is Smith going to draw anything? Will Eriksson draw anything? Would they be willing to part ways with Brad Marchand if someone wanted him? But it's such a different spot for the Bruins right now. And I almost feel like, to your point, Ozzy, they're not quite sure how to handle it.
Now, Peter Chiarelli and Claude Julien, I mean, you got to be fans about, they did deliver a Stanley Cup and that through
Absolutely.
Everything. So, but do you think at this point the Tyler Seguin trade comes back to bite him in the butt?
You know what, guys? When I was down there, I couldn't really say much about it because I was working for Nesson, and Nesson obviously is owned somewhat by the Bruins. I look at that trade and I think it just absolutely bites them in the backboard. I mean, this was a player that they absolutely mismanaged, in my opinion. You know, they didn't play him, first of all, in his natural position at center. They had him on the third line, playing with players that, you know, you can't play him with those type of players, and that's nothing against those guys, but that was more like a grind line for them, you know? You can't play him with Chris Kelly and those type of players. You have to put him up in the top six, and look what he's done in Dallas with that kind of opportunity. It's also the system, too. I mean, the Bruins don't play that type of system, and that's another thing that you have to look at. I think Claude Julien and the Bruins are going to have to start. I know that defense has been their identity, but we've seen an evolution in the game, especially in the Eastern Conference, with how wide open the game is now, how fast it is. And I think they're going to have to start to change the way they structure their systems, and they're going to have to be more open, and they're going to have to be more about the offensive side of the game, because right now it seems to be really hurting them. But, you know, I think Tyler Seguin is an incredible player. I can tell you this, for honestly, he wasn't doing anything down there that anybody else wasn't doing down there. I mean, you know, you'd see those guys out. He wasn't doing anything worse. And I just think it's a player that they kind of, I don't want to say they gave up on him, but they just didn't utilize him the way he was supposed to. And I think that it definitely is a trade that they lost.
Leah, let's shift over to another team that you're familiar of, just because of your cousin Ronnie Hextall in his first in his first year with the Philadelphia Flyers as their GM, and of course the story that Rogers did on the goaltenders that came out of Brandon and all of that stuff, you know, with the Western Hockey League, but in particular the Flyers, winners again today, 6-1-3 in their last 10 hockey games. Why the turnaround all of a sudden? You know, goaltender injuries to Mason, Zepp steps in, but again, a pretty good feel-good story for the Philadelphia Flyers as of late.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's a turnaround so much as I think that they've underachieved this year in some ways. You know, you look at what Voracek and Drew have done, and obviously they've been offensive juggernauts, but they've slowed down their paces a little bit right now. But you know, this Philly team, it just always seems like you can never count them out. And the fact that they won the shootout today, because they've been so horrendous in the shootout, I think they're only 3-7 this year, but they're usually not good in it, and they can take down a team like Nashville. And I just think that's the frustration that sets in if you're a Flyers fan, because one day it looks like they could beat anybody in the league, and then the next day they're the worst team on the ice. And so there's a point of inconsistency there that that's what's so frustrating. I don't know why they're able to turn it on sometimes and then they fall off the map. And if we all knew, I think you'd see a Philadelphia Flyers team that would be, instead of fighting for a playoff spot, they would be one of the top teams in the Metropolitan Division. But they're just not. But, I mean, you know, they've had some problems. You know, guys, look at the injuries they've had. Their defense is just not being good. And, you know, with Steve Mason not being able to stay healthy and whatnot. But I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys think they're going to get in?
I think they got a chance, obviously.
The
momentum at the right time, and it's in, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the team we're talking earlier about being the Boston Bruins as well. So it's they're getting hot at the right time, and this is what makes the trade deadline interesting. Who maybe does the right tweak at the Bruins last year?
Well, yeah, and I think we all know this, and I know Ronnie went on the record for it, but if you're thinking Philly might do what Philly usually does, and that's kind of lose their mind at the trade deadline, that's not going to happen this year. You know, if anything, you know, they've been trying to unload some of their bad contracts. They haven't had any takers. But I don't see Philly really doing anything at the deadline. And, you know, I think that's the right move by them because, you know, they probably don't want to salvage any of their future, because that's Ron's whole philosophy. And that's what he came in for, you know, draft smart, build your team and do what he did in L.A. and create a winner. But It's fun to watch right now. I mean, the East is just so wide open, and then you have that Western Conference, which every given night you have a new team in the playoff picture. So it's just so much fun right now.
Leah Hextall joining Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network. Speaking of Ron Hextall, I don't know what he said or not, but also from what you've observed, we're talking earlier Mike Richards and what kind of value he still may have out there. And, of course, Ron was in Los Angeles for a number of years with him. Ozzie and I were debating it regarding whether it's Dion Phaneuf or somebody else. I'm curious what you think Mike Richards still has to offer on an NHL level, especially given the term on his contract.
You know, and that's the sad thing right now, guys, is that, you know, obviously when you're a player and you get that kind of deal, wow, great, I'm set for life. But right now, that's what's keeping Mike Richards, in my opinion, out of the National Hockey League. We're in this cap world, and no one can afford to take that contract because it's a massive deal that was made when he had a ton of worth. And if you want to talk about his worth right now, do I think he could play on a team in the National Hockey League? Absolutely. He's not by any means going to be in your top six. He's like, you know, right now, he's a fourth-line guy. He's really slowed down. He's not what he was, but I just know from what Ron has told me. I mean, he was there when LA made the trade to bring, you know, him and Lombardi obviously have big Philly roots, but they went all in to bring in players like Mike Richards and then, you know, and then also Jeff Carter that year. And they made those trades and they went on to win the cup. And those two guys were big pieces of that puzzle in their first cup back in 2012. So I think Mike Richards, he's won at every level. There's a lot of teams that I think could use him in several different ways. But I don't know if we see him again, guys, in the NHL because of that contract.
Leah, I'm kind of curious of someone that's just moved to the city in this your first year with Rogers. And, you know, Gord and I have been a part of the Maple Leafs for many, many years. just kind of your take on what you have seen occur, you know, this year as an interesting observer and just the vibe that you feel as you peruse through the city regarding the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I've never seen anything like it. You know, I've been in some hockey mad markets, and I've worked in some hockey mad markets. You know, I was there in Winnipeg when the team came back and covered them the first season, and no one loves hockey, in my opinion, more than the people, the Jets fans. And then I go to Boston, and it's just a crazy environment as well and quite the fishbowl. But this is insane. And the reaction to, you know, just every little thing. I can't imagine being a player for the Toronto Maple Leafs because you can't do anything without a million eyes on it and there being some sort of crazy over-the-top reaction to everything that happens instead of what really should be focused on. And that's just the absolute circus that this team is and how much they have to do in order to build a winner. And you know, Gord, you and I have talked about it. I think we were on air that day when the Globe and Mail article came out talking about how they could, you know, the MLSE board had given them the right to blow it up and draft well and all that, and it was going to take 3 years. And we were giggling because there's no way it's going to take just 3 years. But this just, you know, from someone who's from Western Canada, you kind of grow up not really liking the Leafs because they're on Hockey Night in Canada every week, and they're not very good. And you think, why aren't our teams on? They're better than this Leafs team. But it's sad because this is the biggest franchise, not only in hockey, but it's one of the marquee franchises in sports. It has so much support. The fans here just love their Leafs. It's unbelievable. And it would be nice to see them just decide, hey, let's do it right. Let's not lose our heads. Let's build a team and create a winner so that we can have a winning culture because it's just sad. They should be the Toronto Maple Leafs. They should be the team that everybody wants to play for.
And certainly, I mean, you covered the New England Patriots, so you know when you get a lot of media frenzy, you still can win. The New York Yankees as well. The opposition tonight, you mentioned the Winnipeg Jets that you covered, and that's an interesting dressing room. And what happened with Evander Kane was really interesting, and so far so good in a lot of ways, but do you think maybe it's still fragile in some ways, or do you think because they all ganged up and got rid of the one guy maybe they wanted to get rid of or whatever? It was unusual, but they've played well since then, and certainly Dustin Byfuglien talked the talk, but he's been walking the walk.
Yeah, it's nice to see Dustin Byfuglien actually living up to his potential because we all know what a beast of a player he can be. I mean, it looks like he'll be back up on forward tonight, not on defense because they've got some injuries up front. But he's such a big man, such great mobility, and he's, you know, it's nice to see him doing well for the Jets. But that's what also kind of makes me laugh is that room, when they moved to Winnipeg from Atlanta, it was really clear early on that that room didn't have a clear-cut leader. So in as I'm watching this unfold, I'm thinking, well, it's nice to see, you know, the Blake Wheelers of the world, and as you mentioned, Gore's, you know, Dustin Byfuglien stepping up. But let's remember, Dustin Byfuglien hasn't been perfect. I mean, I was there when he came into camp about 30 pounds overweight. You know, I've been there before when Wheeler was absolutely inconsistent and didn't seem to want to show up to play in that first season, and I didn't see Evander Kane throwing him under the bus when he was scoring 30 goals that year. It's a, in my opinion, it's a dysfunctional room. I think, obviously, moving Evander Kane out is not just good for the Winnipeg Jets, but it's good for Evander Kane. And I liken it to the Tyler Seguin situation. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I know the trade looks really good right now, but Evander Kane's a player. That kid has talent. And this fresh start could end up being something where we might see him develop into a player. And not even might. He's gonna develop into a great power forward. And he doesn't have the skill set of Seguin, but he's got other intangibles. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But for the Winnipeg Jets right now, they, in my opinion, I didn't have them making the playoff, guys, and the fact that they are doing what they're doing and they're managing to, you know, consistently win hockey games, if, you know, they can stay out of that penalty box for a bit, then they might be okay, because it definitely hurt them against Washington. But I think a lot of that hinges on to Paul Maurice. I think they've got a great coach in there, and if he can get everything organized, which he seems to be doing, and that room can now come together, and if the Winnipeg Jets can hold on and have the horses and make the playoffs here in this Western Conference, wait till Winnipeg gets playoff hockey. It's going to be friggin' insane. It's going to be unbelievable there.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. Pulling for all the Canadian-based teams.
Yeah.
And I know tonight, 7 o'clock, of course, we have the action right here on Hockey Night in Canada. I will see you around the shop sometime next week. Leah, thanks very much for joining us.
Monday, Gord.
That's right, Monday.
Monday. Counting the minutes.
Sounds good. It's okay. 48 hours. I'll see you in 48 hours.
I look forward to meeting her too, Gord.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. Okay.
So maybe you can introduce me to Leah.
I'll bring you an 8.5
pound. It'd be nice.
I'll bring you a picture of Oz, okay? We'll go from there. Slowly but surely.
All right, boys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Leah.
Okay, have a good night.
Leah Hextall from Sportsnet joining us, talking about kind of took on our tour of the different teams she's connected with, but yeah, pretty good run she had in Boston with the covering the not just the Bruins, but Patriots and Boston Red Sox. Yeah,
you know what? It is good to talk to somebody like her that's been around the game and, you know, from where she came from, you know,
Brandon Manitoba,
covering the Jets and then, you know, also the Bruins. And so it brings a unique perspective. But it is fun to get those kind of inside things from, you know, Leah when she did, in fact, you know, have some good information on some of those particular teams in general.
I tell you, people new to the city as well. Mm-hmm. They find Air Canada Centre quiet, mm-hmm. even when the team was doing well. That's one thing. And certainly Winnipeg will be one that'll go overboard. They've made it a very fun, intimate environment for now.
So you learn something from me asking her some specific
questions.
Always do,
Oz. I'm always, well, rarely learn from you, but in life in general, I'm always trying to learn. Kelly Rudy, I'll learn something from him. He's going to join us next hour. Jim Toth also will talk about those Winnipeg Jets getting set to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne taking a look at 11 games going on around the National Hockey League, and of course focusing in on the Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets. More coming up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Fan Radio Network.
Want to talk a little hockey? Why are we asking? Of course you do. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network, of course, in the GTA area. Be out there, drive carefully. It certainly is hockey weather. The snow been coming down and getting set for the Toronto Maple Leafs to take on the Winnipeg Jets. As he mentioned, 11 games going on around the National Hockey League. Eddie Olchuk joined us earlier. He is at the outdoor game in Santa Clara, California. Levi's Stadium. For the game between the San Jose Sharks and the Los Angeles Kings. And also joining us, of course, goaltending legend, broadcast legend, Kelly Rudy from California. How are you, Kelly?
Wow, I'm a legend now.
Well, I know. Since you worked with me for 2 years in Hockey Night in Canada Radio.
I know. That elevated me. I was just an ordinary goaltender, kind of made an average career for myself. Now all of a sudden I work with you for 2 years and I'm a legend. I like that way of thinking, by the way.
Well, I know. I'm in a little studio here with Ozzy and you're in California, so it worked out for one of us.
Good point by you.
You know, people know your background with the LA Kings and not so much with the San Jose Sharks, but from doing you co-hosted with me for 2 days a week for a couple of years. It was just great on Hockey Night in Canada Radio.
Yeah.
Your roommate he lived at your place when he was a rookie?
Yeah. Patrick Marleau. And I had a nice visit with he and his wife yesterday, Tina. Really cool to see, just, you know, he goes from a young man to a full-grown adult doing really, really well for himself, four children now and stuff. So those are the things you really think about. Something really cool, too, I know that most people don't even remember that I had played for the Sharks. It was at the end of my career for two short years, but last night they had an alumni dinner, the Sharks did, and so it was really great to catch up with a bunch of guys that I had played with, and, you know, you share the stories and all that kind of stuff. So those things really make events like this special. And the other thing is that what I think why this game seems a little bit different than most of them is because a lot of these outdoor games, they're fantastic, don't get me wrong, but they're more like a novelty, whereas tonight's game, because of the hatred between the two teams, the standings, and everything else that goes along with it, this one has a real cool vibe to it, too.
Kelly, so I just want to let you know that I do all the work. I mentioned what Gord just asked you about Patrick Marleau and stuff. And
what then are you talking about?
Then he just talking about.
I'm the one that
takes
told
the information
you did,
away.
You didn't know that Kelly, Patrick Marleau lived at Kelly's place his rookie year.
No, I did
How
not.
How would you know that?
I did not know that, but I was asking
if you're out of
about
questions, I can carry it with Kelly. No problem.
Anyways, let's get back. I want to continue on my questioning of
well, you haven't even started. Okay, go.
of Patrick Marleau because of... Yeah, the fact is that your final year in the National Hockey League with San Jose, Patrick Marleau was a rookie. And you go back now and you do the math. A lot of years, Patrick Marleau has been a San Jose Shark. So you saw him as a rookie. He was the captain. He's still a San Jose Shark. What kind of stuff can you just simply glean and give the listening audience some insights into what appears to be a very quiet guy on the outside, and yet he's had a fantastic career? But he still remains a San Jose Shark, and you wonder, is it going to be that way for the remainder of his career? What can you give us on Patrick Marleau?
Well, first of all, you think that he's a quiet, unassuming guy, but he's actually got this huge burning passion inside, and he goes about his business very professionally. I think that's why he's had such a great career. Genetics have played a part of it. I think that... if I'm not mistaken, I was talking to Ray Tufts, their athletic trainer, and he mentioned to me, this is the last time I did the Sharks, and I think he said Patty has only missed like 20-some games in his career, which is a phenomenal feat considering he started in 1998. But here's a guy that he's really, really proud. He'd never brag about himself, though. I think that he was included in two Canadian Olympic teams, 2010 and 2014, and had a big part in those games and victories. I think that tells you a lot about what the rest of the hockey world thinks about him, even though I don't think he gets the attention he really deserves. I talked to some players around the league just over the course of the last 2 years, and one of the things they said to me, he's one of the hardest guys to play against because he's a big physical guy. He's about 220 pounds. Now, he's not going to rock you with the enormous hits, but he's just never weak on the puck. When he loses it, he wants it back badly. Just a real heavy player and just a wonderful human being. I have all the time in the world for him, and I think back finally to our memories. You know, things like Christmas, and we had three young daughters at the time, and he was helping us put the Barbie motorhome together and the basketball hoop in the driveway and all these sorts of things. So a level-headed kid from Aneroid, Saskatchewan, and he's raised properly with his parents, Dennis and Jeanette.
See, those are nice family memories. You know what we have here? Ozzy and I had to go to the Keg together for Valentine's Day dinner last Saturday. Can you believe that's sad or what? Because we were doing the game. I know.
Oh, I got to be in studio with you guys one time.
And so we could use it. The other side, you know, Dean Lombardi would only come on Hockey Night in Canada Radio when Kelly was co-hosting, okay? He thinks so highly of Kelly Rudy and vice versa. But knowing the LA organization, Kelly, we've been asking. Ozzy's big on Mike Richards, and Mike Richards seems to be a real wild card in play because of the contract. And obviously teams like the Leafs are –
Say desperate wouldn't be too much of a stretch, but if you're getting Mike Richards, the contract considered, what do you think you might be getting?
A winner, a guy that knows how to rise to the occasion. I'm a big fan as well, Ozzie, and I just think that for whatever reason it didn't work out, and we've heard all the rumors about why and so on, but at times, even last year in the playoffs when I started, I covered the San Jose, the Kings series, and boy, he looked really slow, but other times in the playoffs, I watched him and that wasn't an issue, but he's a guy that competes hard. He's a great teammate. If I were a general manager in the National Hockey League, I would certainly be kicking the tires too, wondering what it would take. I'd be doing my due diligence. I'd be scouting him a lot just to make sure that if, in fact, I do get him, that I'm not stuck with him, that he'll be of some help to my organization.
Well, Kelly, Gord often puts words in my mouth. I said I like the guy. I wasn't kicking tires that he had to be here because we're debating about this Dion Phaneuf, whether he's going to be a Maple Leaf or whatever.
I heard it differently.
but onward and upwards as far as you covering the game tonight and not only covering this game, but you've been covering the Calgary Flames for the last number of seasons. And again, a real good story. And as the West continues to tighten up, and I know they've convinced a lot of people of just simply their work ethic. But as things get tightened up now, do you still think that they've got it in them to get to the promised land as far as just making that playoff spot as things tighten up?
I do, and maybe I'm a little bit biased because I'm around them virtually every day, and I just see all the qualities that they have as a team, and their coaching staff is phenomenal. I'm a big believer in what they're doing and the way they play. I think they use the stretch pass better than anybody in the game today because of the two things. They have great speed, and secondly, because their defensemen are terrific at making that first pass, and we all know the importance of that. If you don't make that first pass a good one, it seems as though you're always hemmed in your own zone. So they have that ability. And every time it seems to me that I'm a little bit curious or I'm wondering if the wheels are going to fall off a little bit, they go on a remarkable run and do something that surprises everybody. Now, I was here in San Jose last night, so I didn't see the loss last night, but I'm back with them on Tuesday in New York City versus the Rangers. So, and the one thing, though, when you really boil it down, I guess, to the teams that really know how to win, like L.A. Calgary's in L.A. about 10 days ago, I believe, and that was one of the most dominant performances I've seen by the Kings in a long, long time, certainly all season long. And I talked to some of the Flames players, and that's exactly what they said, too. It wasn't so much what they didn't do. It's just what the Kings did. And they were just focused that night, the Kings. I guess they didn't even have much of a, rah-rah type thing. They just knew in the dressing room how the importance of the game and the importance of getting on a streak, and they've done just that, now winning six in a row.
Yeah, certainly out of character, losing in the third period to Anaheim last night. But, just you're a guy that you looked at the Calgary Flames and you said things like, Rene Bourque, for example, was a guy to move on. Just nothing against him, but you had to change some things.
Right.
There were a number of variables that obviously have clicked there. Apply it to Toronto, where everyone's what bothers me is they're saying, okay, 5 years. Got to give someone 5 years. Well, Calgary proves you don't have to take 5 years. And maybe at the Calgary situation, how do you see it possibly working in Toronto?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that 5 years is far too long in today's game, because one of the reasons why, if you draft well, we know that more than ever in the history of the National Hockey League, young players can play, and coaches don't have a problem using them in clutch situations and so on. Calgary is a great example of that. I thought that their cupboards were pretty bare like 4 years ago, and then they started to draft really well and get guys, surprise guys, and sign some guys that people weren't really all that interested in, and they've really turned it around, and I would agree that that's what they have to do in Toronto, and I wouldn't give them the five-year window to get it turned around. You can do it much quicker in today's game. You just have to draft well, trade well, make some good decisions with your core players, and I think that it's so blown out of proportion in Toronto, and it's overwhelming for the players if they allow that to happen. I was talking to somebody yesterday about Carey Price. He's under such enormous pressure also in Montreal, the two different languages, that being a factor and so on, and just everything of the scrutiny that you have playing there. And yet, because of his nature, he handles it much better than the Maple Leaf players have. For whatever reason, if it's a character flaw or they've just been there too long and it's overwhelming, I don't know, but that's a big part of it, who you have in your dressing room.
Kelly, one question, and just getting back to Calgary, because you know the team so, so well, and being a former goaltender, just kind of curious as to whether you thought that Jonas Hiller had it in him. I mean, I know he's only a couple of games over 500, but, you know, going from being the guy in Anaheim to losing his job basically to Frederik Andersen, I don't know if that was financial considerations, but moving on to Calgary and the 40 games that he's played, I mean, he has been really solid in the nets, and the question is, are you surprised that he's been able to regain, I think, what he had in Anaheim a number of years ago?
Not really. He's another one of those guys that's quietly competitive. The thing is, when he gets on a roll, and he's been on two of them, the latest one since the All-Star break, and one right at the start of the season that lasted about a month and a half. When he's playing like that, he's as good as anybody in the game. Like, he is just rock solid. But the problem with him when he plays mediocre, it's not the way that he gives up the goals. I mean, it's not that he only gives up like three or something, but there's usually one bad one mixed in the lot. And that's the one that when he's not as sharp as he can be, that's the killer. It's not that they're earning their goals. He's just giving them, the other team, usually a freebie. But right now, and again, I didn't watch game last night, that hasn't been the case at all. In fact, he got pulled in that LA game. And if not for him, he had given up four goals after two periods. If not for him, I bet it would have been about 8 or 9-0. That's how good he was. So overall, I'm not surprised, but he's going to have to continue that play because it's so tight in the West.
Well, from Calgary, you're back to your California roots after your stop on Long Island, of course. And just wondering, Ozzie, the 93 series, did you score on Kelly Rudy in that series at all?
No, I passed it off to Wendell.
Good choice, because I made Wendell a very rich person.
Well, and yourself as well. Still the memories of that back then. Hey, Kelly, thanks for making time. I know you're busy tonight. It's great to see you busy as ever back in Toronto quite a bit. So hopefully we'll catch up down the road, okay?
Gordon, Mark, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Kelly Rudy joining us. Of course, he's full on now with the Calgary Flames and Hockey Night in Canada.
Well, you're just trying to throw me under the bus, just like that, eh? You know, in front of Kelly.
That's right. Just be ready. Be ready. Don't be afraid to back it up. I know you do that as well. So don't. It's the expression about that. He's anyway, good guy. And it's funny to think about. He's the goalie, like this series we keep talking about, the 1993 Leafs versus Kings. Kelly Rudy was the goalie in that infamous thing that the Leaf fans still dining on 22 years later.
No, absolutely. And there's some things that you remember about players, and you know, go through the years of you know, what jumped out at you for the different types of teams. And of course, Kelly was there after the Islanders had won, you know, their Stanley Cups. But again, much like Glenn Healy is the kind of mask, you know, that these guys were
and
famous
Heels was
for,
his
right?
backup. Heels was the Islanders then. Sorry.
But you know what I mean? They had those, the cage. And of course, Kelly had hair back then, which he used, you know, that's kind of a headband,
the bandana type thing,
tuck out the back, and again, if you're watching any of the highlights from the way that the goaltenders played, you know, back then, I mean, always on their feet, and you know, it was Patrick Roy who basically came in and started to change the way a goaltender would play it in the butterfly style. But again, fun time certainly, and it doesn't seem that long ago. But yeah, we're coming up to what, 22 years now in that series in 93, and yeah, I kind of, the first thing that I did jump out to me was Wendell's hat trick in the LA Forum, and he went to the backhand over Kelly's glove, which is probably one of the you know, fond memories, at least, of that matchup that we had.
Well, doing the radio, doing the color with Joe Bowen for that series, and you know, hard to believe, because we talk about the gap. Here we are, 22 years again, but back then we were talking about the gap, and for the second series against the St. Louis Blues, Game 7 was in Toronto, and I remember right off the bat, you look at the press notes. This is the first Game 7 in Toronto since 1964 when they won the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
29 years between that had taken that long, and here we have that kind of gap again. And in Kelly's case, he's also a guy that'll articulate about his New York Islander times. He was there at the tail end, thinks the world of Bill Torrey and Al Arbor about building a team, building a winner together. His experience with the Kings. He's also very big on his brief Sharks experience as well. And that's why, to bring it around to the Toronto and Brendan Shanahan, and I look at it that, because you both say the same thing about Mike Richards, a winner. Mm-hmm. And that does have value. That does have cachet. But in Shanahan's case, St. Louis, New Jersey, Detroit, a positive experience in New York, mm-hmm. positive experiences in winning franchises, organizations, whether it was, you know, Ken Holland, whether it was Lou Lamoriello, the best of the St. Louis Blues for a while. And that's what intrigues me and gives me hope about that being successfully imprinted here. It didn't quite happen for Ken Dryden. It's not that easy to just do it.
Well, you know what? There's one thing that we can say about Brendan. As of course, we wish that he could step on the ice and play the way that he approached the game. I mean, power forward, passionate, you know, would do anything to win. And, you know, you look at up and down the lineup and say, you know, who are those players that would play like that in the blue and white? And yet, at the same time, I mean, a most unusual, talking about on-the-job training, you know, that you know, Tim Lewicki was going to teach Brendan. Well, I don't think he was going to teach him these types of things that he's been going through. But again, tough decisions, no question about it, whether it's retool, a complete rebuild. And again, a week, 9 days away from trade deadline. And stay tuned, because this is going to be an imprint of what this team looks forward to moving ahead. Right.
Okay, we'll be able to talk about it around the games as well, but we'll get one more Hockey Nation next Saturday, just a couple of days before the trade deadline, to talk about it. I just don't see any big trades. I think Daniel Winnick's a no-brainer, and maybe guys like that. I just don't, and I don't say that's a bad thing either. I think a lot of people are really expecting, you know, big trades by then, and I just think for the cap and other reasons, there won't be. So
that's
it'll be
fine.
More in the
that's
offseason.
That's fine. You know what? And I wouldn't be surprised by that as well. But yet, you know, come the draft and moving forward next year, that there will be significant decisions that will be made.
You know, and I also wanted to bring up with Kelly is Sam Bennett now being sent back to Kingston by the Calgary Flames. And you know, you see a situation there. Sean Monahan now 20 goals. And as you said last night, no sophomore jinx for him, but about the injecting young players in the lineup. But you look at last year's number two and number three players, you know, they went back to junior. They're still a year away from even making the NHL, and not a bad thing in Sam Reinhart's case or Sam Bennett's case, you know, that way. But it also taking who everyone's getting excited about. Okay, if the Leafs finish as low as third or whatever it may be, there's very few Ekblads making the that kind of imprint with the Florida Panthers.
Absolutely, and
number one overall too.
Again, when you talk about this draft though, and again, it remains to be seen, you know, which of those particular players, like McDavid's going to play next year. Eichel's going to play next year. And do you think they'll have a significant impact on their particular teams? I mean, we've got the hunch that those two in particular, and maybe the Hanifin kid on the back end. But after that, I can understand that guys like Strome are going to take their time developing. And, you know, Mitch from London, his last name, please, Gord. You don't know him either. But Mitch Marner, I believe.
Yeah.
And so for those type of guys, you understand that they're going to be good NHL players at some point. And further my point of what I talked about when Florida was in town here is that it's taken a while for Jonathan Huberdeau. Like Jonathan Huberdeau, third overall, great junior, won the Memorial Cup. And yet what kind of an impact has he had in the National Hockey League? And he's 21 years of age now.
Well, and again, and part of it when we're talking about some of these guys is – when you worked in the business, you just saw a lot and you were up on it, whether, you know, whatever your opinions were, good, bad, indifferent. The media hype now and everything people are available to become instant experts, but guys that never seen play. Like I just don't think Eichel's going to play. Like, I just think McDavid is in a class by himself. And that's not a knock against somebody.
How many times have you watched Eichel?
Just a few times, not
okay.
a ton.
Yep.
I've seen, I'm saying that up front. I don't follow it anywhere close
well,
to
that's
what used
because,
to.
That's because being in a hockey market here and the guy plays in the Ontario Hockey League and
well, you got to go to games too.
On Sportsnet that you get to see a lot of his stuff.
Yeah,
Team
but
Canada, I mean, Eichel, we haven't seen a lot of, I mean, I saw a little bit of a highlight last week and, you know, great hands and great move in the offensive zone. But yeah, I don't know anything about Jack
Eichel. I mean, it's funny because Toronto Maple Leafs, one of the things we did right in the 1980s, very few. We were one of only two teams that did not make an offer to Ray Stazak. Liked Adam Oates, though. Liked Adam Oates. Those were the unrestricted free agents. Detroit signed them all way back when. So, I mean, I just, about guys that I thought that, and I give Floyd Smith credit for that as far as the evaluation goes. So I just mean when you're in the trenches and that is when you can really evaluate guys that way. No question, Toronto Maple Leafs have guys in the trenches that you hope cultivate this. This is a chance, like this hopefully is the lowest they're going to pick for many years to come. Last time it happened, the pick had been traded to the Boston Bruins. So whether it's third overall, fourth overall, fifth overall, you're hoping it's the last time they can dip this low. So hope it's a quality pick.
But again, it's a product of your environment. So when you look at a guy like Sean Monahan that was drafted sixth overall, you know, two drafts ago, and he goes into Calgary and I think surprised everybody. There wasn't an expectation for Sean Monahan to become a Calgary Flame last year.
Oh, he made it by merit. When a guy makes it by merit, that's a different, it's absolutely bang on.
Okay, go back to Nazem Kadri right here with the Toronto Maple Leafs when we moved up and picked Nazem Kadri. And then all of a sudden, his first year as an 18-year-old, I mean, we've got this huge billboard of Nazem Kadri in the media room. You know what I'm saying? Like, and Paul Maurice, I think, had said it best, and this is where I agreed with him, is that we make these guys out as though we're giving them the Academy Award when they have a good game, right?
Well, and the guy before was Luke Shen. They moved up to Luke Shen. I don't think they moved up in the Nazem Kadri trade, but still. And the point being was Nazem Kadri, because a product of losing and going on losing streaks.
We put so much emphasis on these guys. It's not going to be different moving forward this year with all these draft picks that you're stockpiling. These kids are going to have that intense scrutiny as to look into the future, right? Like, be a first-round pick this year. If the Leafs right now have a couple of those picks, you know, remains to be seen if they'll get any more. But again, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, like probably never before, or maybe since Wendell Clark of 1985, that there's going to be this much attention on a first-round pick for this organization.
Well, no,
it will be.
It's more. I mean, Wendell was number one overall, but just look at us.
When
now.
Have we there ever no, talked about a first round pick as much as we're talking about it? Oh no, right now
absolutely.
With this organization.
Well, no, I think every year, like
no, more so now. We're off the charts right now.
Well, we've never talked about it during the season like now.
Oh, no, exactly.
Because there's the Connor McDavid.
It is February. We're talking about the draft already.
But I just to compare Wendell's draft to nowadays. I mean, there was no all sports radio. There were no all sports TV stations. You know, it's just the volume. As far as that goes, that's different. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the game, get the Winnipeg point of view. Jim Toth will join us. You're listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Fan Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network. Toronto Maple Leafs getting set to host the Winnipeg Jets tonight at Air Canada Centre. Of course, Ozzie, the game in Winnipeg. Last game, Randy Carlyle coached for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I remember it very well. And I remember the Leafs, I don't think they gave James Reimer any type of protection at all. What was it, 5-1 score, I believe it was?
It was seemingly a precursor to how they played. They had that great New Year's Eve game against the Boston Bruins, and that's when Joffrey Lupo was among the injured. He'll be back tonight. And then they went into Minnesota and went into Winnipeg, and then it got turned over to Peter Horachuk, and not a heck of a lot has changed. We'll see if they get back on track against the Winnipeg Jets. Jim Toth joining us, of course, CJOB, covers the Jets and the National Hockey League. So how about that? Jim, the Winnipeg Jets helped send the Maple Leafs on this aimless downward spiral path.
Well, I remember that night fondly myself, gentlemen. Thanks for having me back. And it was to the displeasure of the MTS crowd, because half of them that night were wearing Leafs jerseys. And it took a beating for those fans in the MTS Center. But it is interesting, because I don't know if Randy Carlyle saw it coming. I didn't know if he knew that it was his time, but he had definitely in Minnesota the night before and that night in Winnipeg sort of done his swan song. You know what? I throw my hands up, in my opinion anyways, and just, I'm going to play Kessel 25 minutes. I'm going to play Phaneuf 25 minutes. Here you go. I'm rolling our best players, and this is what happens. It just wasn't working out. And they look dysfunctional. And really, you know, everybody says this maybe a little bit too much in sports, but to me, they look disinterested and like they didn't care.
Jimmy, what about the Winnipeg Jets? You know, much publicized trade that occurred a number of weeks ago. Just kind of curious with the deal being done, Tyler Myers coming over, Drew Stafford. What's the team been like, or what's been the response since that trade? Has it been, or has it lived up to expectations, or are we still in the stage where, you know what, they've just got to figure this out with some of these new players?
Well, I think any trade takes some time. I do still believe that Evander Kane is the best player involved in that trade, and I do believe in Evander Kane. I'm not a big fan of his off-ice antics and everything else that he brought to this city and that room, and I know maybe one hundredth of what went on in that room. But I do think he will start scoring 30 goals a year in 2 or 3 years from now, and I think he will produce. Zach Bogosian is a tough, you know, puck-moving defenseman if he can continue to develop. But I think it was a trade that was needed. And I was in the room the day that they had the day off when they got back from Vancouver the next day, and I tweeted that out once I left the room and we were waiting for Paul Maurice. It was a different environment. In the 3.5 years that this team had been here, whenever Evander Kane had maybe called himself a healthy scratch in Chicago that one time or put some photos on Instagram, the one thing that I always saw in the room was the leaders, you know, I could tell maybe they didn't like it or just didn't care, but continuously said he's a big part of our team, we need him. You know, things happen, whatever, we don't care. That day was different. That day, Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, they had had it. They had said that, I don't really care anymore, and whatever happens, happens. I'm not talking about it, and we've got a game tomorrow. And so you knew something was going to happen, and that was before, you know, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet broke the story that he didn't show up for the game and had quit on them. And as you know, Mark, when you quit on a team, there's a lot of things that can go on, and maybe you have reasons to do something, but when you quit on a team, that's when the team quits on you, and that's what I think happened. So I think they're in a better place. I think Drew Stafford comes in here, and he knows 10 or 12 of these guys. He skates every summer and has for years with Mark Stewart, Blake Wheeler, Dustin Byfuglien. They call it the Minnesota Mafia in the summer, and I think that I believe in Tyler Myers. I think he's a guy that I've covered in a Western Hockey League for a couple of years. I think he can be way better. I think he has a bigger upside than Zach Bogosian. I just think he needs a year under Charlie Huddy, and I think he needs a year where he's not asked to do everything. I think he won the Calder and then was asked to play too many minutes in every scenario, and when they don't go well, he sort of regressed. I think he'll flourish here in Winnipeg and under Charlie Huddy.
You know, Jim, I was trying to think of comparable to the Evander Kane situation about players actually speaking out. One I did think about was Mike Vanderjagt when he spoke out, and then Peyton Manning called him the drunk Canadian kicker, you know, on the whatever, just because it's so unusual. And what I wondered that day is, did the Jets regret the players talking? I mean, are the players that tight with the media that's just different here? You know, like quite often you think someone would say, we prefer you don't talk to the media. But they see, or maybe did they say, this is good, it all gets out, so we can just rid of the problem once and for all?
Yeah, they don't talk much. They don't open up. But they are very straightforward when it comes to the game. And I know that some people in this town have questioned the leadership on this team, and I've never experienced that. I remember last year around February when Blake Wheeler came out and said, we're as frustrated as you are because we stand up here and tell you the same crap every year, and we can't figure out why we can't get consistent. I find the leadership in this room very good, but they keep it close to themselves. And Mark Stewart Gord said it, I thought it perfectly, the day he addressed the media about the issue, and it was a game day, and he said, look, I know you guys love this in the media, which I don't think we all love it, but he said, you have a job to do. But the bottom line is you get a story out of this room once or twice a year, and that's it. And you have no clue what goes on day to day in this room. And I think the tracksuit incident, whether Evander Kane's denying it now, but whether that happened, I think that went on continuously. He was a healthy scratch in Toronto last year, guys, on a Saturday night, and he was seen at a Raptors game having a beer. I'm talking about Evander Kane, and everybody thinks that's why he was a healthy scratch the next night. It wasn't. It was because he was seen on TV at a Raptors game having a beer, and then the next day showed up late. And that's the kind of things that you don't have to do. And what fans here who like Evander Kane, and I do on my radio show, is explain to them, I understand you think you know the story, but in reality, if a guy continuously comes into a group of men of 19 or 20 and goes out of his way to be different or not abide by the rules, the same those 19 guys have no problem abiding by, then there's an issue, and people grow tired of it. And I, you know, Dustin Byfuglien never addresses it. He dances around the issue and says we're a family. And I think he feels bad about it from the Dustin Byfuglien I've gotten to know. I think that if he knew that would cause Evander Kane to quit the team, he wouldn't have thrown the tracksuit in the shower. But that being said, he threw it in there because he was sick of 3 or 4 years of you thinking you're better than the rest of us.
Jimmy, moving on to the coach behind the bench, Paul Maurice, and I got to confess, I was one of the first ones that was a little bit surprised with Shovel Dayoff, the general manager, hiring Paul Maurice last year after firing Claude Noel. And Paul Maurice, I mean, the team really responded, I think, right off the bat with Paul Maurice. So, you know, here we are. They're knocking on the playoff door this year. A lot of things to like about the Winnipeg Jets and the type of hockey that they are playing. under Paul Maurice. What's been your assessment of what Paul's been able to bring to the mix for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, this is going to sound arrogant, Mark, but at the start of last year in our show when we were doing previews, I said if Claude Noel doesn't last, everybody was talking about Laviolette and everyone, and I said I think Paul Maurice, from my experience of covering the American Hockey League with him and what he was doing with the Marlies at the time coming into Winnipeg, and you guys probably know that he would stay after a morning skate and talk hockey for an hour, hour and a half, his philosophies. And I just looked at this group of Winnipeg Jets players, which, yes, they are young, and I thought he could help young players. That's what he's good at. But he's also a motivator, and he's got a bunch of a core talent here that just hasn't reached anywhere near its performance. And so I believe that if they were going to make a coaching change, they should bring him in because of what he did in Carolina and what he tried to do in Toronto and what he was doing with young players with the Marlies. He respects his players, but he quietly demands the most out of you. And I think what he's done is what Blake Wheeler told me at the end of training camp. I think, well, not at the end of training camp, but a month into the season, guys, I talked to Blake. I said, what's the difference this year? You guys have been looking for consistency. And he said, you know what? Paul broke us down in training camp. And I don't mean mentally, but every day we'd come in and he would show us video and say, this is who you guys think you are. And then he'd show us videos of us winning or doing good stuff. He goes, this is who you are. And he said he was relentless. Every day he broke us down to say, you guys think you're this and you're that and you can do this and you can perform this way. And you can't. This is who you are. This is what will make you successful. And he put in that system. That's what I think coaches are hired to do, is to not coach a system. It's to figure out what you have, get the best system that suits them, and then get them to buy in and perform it. And I think that's what he's done. I'm a big believer in Paul Maurice, and I think he deserves a lot of credit.
Goaltending situation, it's maybe kind of like the Leafs, trying to figure out about Pavlik has a long-term contract, but trying to figure number one out moving forward to the future. Kind of a happy predicament to have right now, I would think.
Yeah, and he likes the rotation. And I know fans are waiting, especially with 22 games to go. They're waiting for him to pick a guy and go with it. And they want it to be Michael Hutchinson. Most fans in this city have had it with Andre Pavlik. And I would argue, I always argue for Andre Pavlik because I don't think maybe he's ever going to be an elite goalie, that's for sure. But the team that's been in front of him has consistently been in the bottom of the NHL on chances given up, opportunities, and turnovers. But the bottom line is the rotation up until the All-Star break was working in that they pushed each other. Andre Pavlik had never been pushed. And I think he had a disastrous season last year. He sort of realized that he got in better shape. But now he's also got that inner push. And this is what this team has needed throughout the lineup. Even when Olli Jokinen was here, he was brought in to push Mark Scheifele. Well, Mark Scheifele got better and ended up taking the number two center job. That's what this goaltending rotation has done. I don't think Paul Maurice is going to pick one. I think down the stretch here, whoever starts winning games, that's who he's going to go with. Andre Pavlik didn't win a game in Washington and let in a bad goal, but the team didn't play well in front of him. Michael Hutchinson wins tonight in Toronto. I think he gets another shot. But Paul Maurice is a big believer in that inner push. You have to control your own destiny, and I'm interested to see how he goes forward. I think Michael Hutchinson gets a starting job next year. I think Andre Pavlik backs up, and then the year after that, I think it is Hutchinson's job for sure. Pavlik has 1 year left. Do what you will with him. You've got Connor Hellebuck coming up through St. John's. But it's been interesting to watch Paul Maurice handle this and really feel no pressure to name himself a number one whatsoever and liking the results he's getting out of the rotation.
Well, talking about the results, just out of curiosity, Jimmy, Dustin Byfuglien, who I know the Jets were really banged up earlier in the season on the back end, and he goes back and plays and is a real imposing player, to just put it to say the least. But yet, with the guys getting healthy now, he's back up front. Where do you prefer him, or where do you like Dustin Byfuglien for the most part?
Dustin Byfuglien's a defenseman guy, and I always have been. I was around the WHL covering it when he was there, too. I saw what he can do. And the reason I say that, Mark, is he can be elite, as you're seeing, on the blue line. But it's up to him, and he's got to work at it to do it. But up front, he's just an average forward. And I think that not taking anything away from what he does well as a forward, but you're taking an elite defenseman and making him average at a different position. And they have to do that. They want to carry this many defensemen. They don't have an extra forward. The system isn't deep right now, unless Kevin Cheveldayoff does another trade. But I've always said, even when he was put up at forward, even at the start of this year, I disagreed with Paul Maurice when he said he's going to stay there. And when he did make the All-Star team as a defenseman, Paul Maurice did say, I might have misjudged that, but I'll be honest with you, he's never played that well from what I've seen that back there either. So it's a catch-22. But in my mind, Dustin Byfuglien's a defenseman. He's still going to, you know, maybe take too long of a shift and maybe lose a guy beside the net once in a while. But he's really cut down on that. And I talked, he doesn't say much ever other than cut jokes. But you talk to the rest of the team, and his good friend Blake Wheeler told us about a month ago that I just think he feels appreciated now. I just think that he came to Winnipeg. He had that arrest going on with his boat infraction in the States. His weight was always questioned. I think he's just sort of settled into his own under Paul Maurice and feels appreciated that he is an elite defenseman, and the team treats him that way, and the fans are now treating him that way, and it's helping him excel at being a better defenseman defensively, and it's just put his game back up to the elite level offensively from the blue line.
Well, Jim, we'll get you, let you get set to get ready to enjoy the game. Thanks very much for joining us. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jim Toth from CJOB in Winnipeg covers the Jets and the National Hockey League. Speaking of Mark Scheifele, let's hear a little bit of the Winnipeg Jet player chatting with our own Matt Brown.
So, Mark, when you guys come in here, for you it's special to play against the Maple Leafs, but when you get a team like this that's physically banged up but mentally banged up too, for you guys in the room, how important is it to keep that same kind of attitude that you guys are in a playoff hunt and this team is just like any other team?
Yeah, it's, we know, we've known what it's like to be in a bit of a slide, so, obviously they're going to come out strong. Every team that's a little struggling a little bit, you know, they're going to come out strong each and every night. And you know, it's a matter of us getting them on early. You know, us having a good start, us, kind of trying to kill the will a little bit. So we're going to want to come out hard. We're going to, we know they have a lot of skill, so that's a thing that we have to be aware of. But we just got to continue to play our game and know if we play our best, we'll be successful.
You guys handled them in Winnipeg pretty easily, but you were physical, and you mentioned the skill they had, and that seemed to affect them a lot. Is that the game plan when you take on a team like this? Is you guys, every night, are a physical team. Everyone finishes their checks. But is it to lean on the top line of the Bozaks and Kessels and JVRs a little more?
Oh, yeah, you definitely have to be hard on those guys. They have a lot of skill. They're going to make plays, and it's a matter of making them play in the D zone, being hard on them all night, finishing our check every time. And I know if we do that, we can be successful. That's just a matter of us playing our game. If we're a physical, fast team, we're playing our game, and that's what we want to do every night.
You guys were in the same spot last year, fighting for a couple of playoff spots. You've been in it for a while now. Last year you slipped out of it and didn't finish where you wanted to. What is it this year that's different for you guys, and what did you learn from last year?
I think it's just the hunger that we have this year. Everyone's willing to make that sacrifice for each other. Everyone's willing to block that shot, take that hit, make that hit for the guy beside him. And I think that's the biggest thing is, each and every night we go out and give it our all and sacrifice for each other. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Former teammate of yours just did his press conference in Buffalo, Evander Kane. With everything that went on media-wise and the stories that come out, what did you learn as a young player about the leadership that it takes to be in the NHL every day and the leadership you guys have in this room?
Yeah, obviously learning from guys like Laddie and Wheeler and Little, Stewart, they're all, they're unbelievable leaders. They, they care about the team so much. They'd sacrifice each and every night to, for the guy beside him. And I think that's the biggest thing that we've all learned is, to be a leader, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't mean being vocal all the time. It means just taking that hit for that guy, blocking that shot for that guy, and not doing it for accolades, not doing it for to get a pat on the back, but doing it to help the team. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned.
What's Paul Maurice done for your career as a player since he's came in?
He's done a lot. He's helped me a ton ever since he came in. He's taught me a lot about my game and about the overall game of hockey, and it's exciting to play for him. He gets you so hyped up for the game. He always keeps you going, and I think it's huge. He's an unbelievable coach, and I know he makes each and every guy in this room play for each other each and every night, and that's huge for us.
Oh, Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets, great to get him. Most of the guys normally walk by Matt Brown in the dressing room, but he stopped by, chatted to our intrepid producer.
Well, it's easy to do.
What, walk by him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just whatever. Just usually they think they ordered a taxi or something like that, whatever, when Matt comes in. What about keys to victory? Ozzie, got about 2 minutes. Keys to victory for tonight's game. Of course, we'll be back after the game.
What about him? Do you have any?
No, that's why you're here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I want to let people know, Jeff Sammet is in the next hour, right? That's right. Jeff's there. And then we have Raptor basketball. And then we'll be back on with Leafs Nation post game.
afterwards tonight. So we'll be back on the airwaves, and we will review your keys to victory and see how they play out.
Well, you know what? Keys to victory have been few and far in between. And
yes,
I've
I know.
Almost wanted to give up on any keys to
Can't.
Victory. But anyways, you know, again, I try to be creative in this capacity, this area.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about, here's a Western Conference team, and I think we're going to tip the hat off to the Winnipeg Jets the way that they're a physical group. I mean, they're playing that heavy brand of hockey now. They've got some big boys. And I'm going to say, did the Leafs have it in them to have a little bit of pushback physically? What's the answer to that question? Do you think they do? The Komaroffs, the Granbergs, the Polaks, the Clarksons, the Holzers, they can't stand up to these guys. But if they at least make an effort physically, I think that'll be a key to them. And you're shaking your head. I'm nodding.
I'm absorbing the key. What do you mean? This is your segment.
Anyways, and point number two is the Leafs' power play. And the only reason I say this is because of the inept penalty killing of the Winnipeg Jets. Their last four games, 57%. They've allowed 9 power play goals against. Okay? So how about that? And don't do that. I don't like when you put your finger up.
It means 1 minute.
Okay.
I'm not giving you the finger.
Point number three, JVR, minus 18 in the 19 games. And he's gotten off the hook. I keep on pointing him out on post-game shows. But JVR, you're 25 years of age. Okay? It's time. You're a big boy. Let's show me something this evening. Please. I'm begging you. Okay?
I like him. Okay. I like the passion. That's what I'm saying. That's what we like your keys to victory.
Give me something, anything.
And the finger, see, was giving you 1 minute. Okay. It's this finger. Appropriate finger. It was not editorializing about anything. Thanks to all our guests today. We had Eddie Olchuk, Leah Hextall, Kelly Rudy, and Jim Toth. Stay tuned for, of course, on Hockey Night in Canada, Leafs taking on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll be back after the game for Leafs Nation postgame. You've been listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and The Fan Radio Network.